Hello, everybody, and welcome to the latest episode of Clothed Men Discuss Bare Naked Ladies. I am Chris Small, and today I am wearing a pink dress-up shirt, a black tie, and some dress slacks, because while I'm not a professional podcaster yet, I do have to work a 9-to-5, and I'm doing this in my lunch break. So Ephraim gets the basically added bonus of seeing me in full work attire, because I take this podcast very seriously.
This is a very good-looking podcast host, guys. And I am Ephraim Ellis, and I am not at work right now, so I'm wearing some moccasin house shoes, dark jeans, a flannel shirt, and a t-shirt I got for Christmas, which is a first annual WKRP Thanksgiving Turkey Drop 1978 t-shirt. And if you don't know what that's a reference to, go look it up on YouTube. It's one of the darkest and funniest moments in mid-century sitcom history.
1978, that is many, yep. Many years ago. And speaking of many times ago, today we are speaking about In Flight, the latest Bare Naked Ladies album. Before we get into that, though, it has been way too long since Ephraim and I actually did speak. That's my fault, scheduling changes, etc. How have you been, sir?
Doing pretty good. I can't remember if it was last episode or the last episode before. Right at the end, I was talking about, in addition to other social medias, you can now find me on the Cameo, which is very, very exciting. And a fun thing related to this podcast happened to me on Cameo a couple of weeks ago. I got a sweet Cameo request from a Degrassi fan for a birthday gift shout out, which I sent to them. But they also mentioned that they like the Bare Naked Ladies and listen to our podcast.
Oh, amazing.
So that's fun. So in that Cameo, I just promised her a little shout out on the podcast. So Lexi, thank you so much for listening to our podcast. Thanks for being a cool Degrassi fan as well. And I hope you enjoy this hopefully not series finale of our podcast.
Oh, that's foreshadowing. I also like that this is probably the closest I will get to Cameo, just by 6 degrees of separation. I'm in here while there's a shout out to someone on Cameo who liked our podcast. So there we go. So thank you, Lexi, for requesting and making me feel like maybe one day I can get a Cameo as well. I will charge very, very little.
Chris, all you got to do is go back 20 years and be on 8 episodes of a very popular Canadian television series.
Everyone, go check out Ephraim's Cameo.
It's a real fun time, guys.
You know what is not a real fun time, unfortunately, spoilers, is In Flight, the latest and most current record by the Bare Naked Ladies. It was released in September of 2003, September 15th to be exact. The number one song on the Billboard charts in that week was I Remember Everything by Zach Bryan and Kacey Musgrave. This is a new age country banger, I guess. Have you heard this song before, Ephraim?
No, I've heard of Kacey Musgrave. I feel like maybe I've heard of Zach Bryan. Or alternatively, that's just a name that if you put it into put a prompt into ChatGPT saying, give me a new country male artist name, that would be one of the ones that they generated, because that sounds like a new country artist name. I have not heard that song. Nope. No thoughts.
I have definitely heard the song that was number one on the Canadian Billboard charts that week, which is Paint the Town Red by Doja Cat. I think I've said this before, but my wife has a very specific music tastes, and there is a song that maybe gets added to her playlist once a year that she really just kind of catches on to and then repeats it indefinitely, which means I know all the lyrics to that song. And the chosen one of 2023 was Paint the Town Red by Doja Cat. It's pretty catchy. It's pretty good. And it's only continued to get bigger as the weeks progress. So there you go. Canada, you are ahead of your time.
Speaking of Degrassi, the Next Generation, so if you type in Ephraim Ellis into Google, I think the fifth or sixth thing down is Ephraim Ellis Doja Cat. And this is specifically because a while back, I don't know if it was Doja Cat or someone who looks like Doja Cat, but there is a photo of, I think actually Doja Cat, with someone who does not look like me, but someone who looks a lot like my character from Degrassi. So there was someone on Twitter who was like, is Doja Cat dating Rick from Degrassi now? No, I am not. I am happily married to a completely different person who is not an international R&B superstar.
Listeners, stop spreading this slander. Ephraim is married to an absolutely amazing woman. We're nixing this rumor here. Calm down, TMZ.
And also, again, fun fact about how out of touch I am. That was the first time I had ever heard of Doja Cat, because I was Googling myself and I was like, oh, what does that mean?
The number one song of the entire year of 2023 on the billboards was Last Night by Morgan Wallen, which, again, a new age country banger, all about getting drunk, letting the liquor talk. I looked up Morgan Wallen. He said some pretty horrible things that you would associate with someone who's a country artist, but not in 2023.
I was going to say, is Morgan Wallen that guy who released the Not in a Small Town song?
Yes, the one and the same.
Yeah, that guy stinks.
Yep.
I don't like him at all.
And let's just keep on tying it into stinkers, because let me tell you something. In flight, I move over, maybe you should drive, because I'm pretty sure that In Flight is now my least favorite Bare Naked Ladies album. Just off the top, that's kind of my hot take and summing up what my thoughts are. Ephraim, how about you?
Currently, it's tied. I am not sure whether I dislike Fake Nudes more. However, it's entirely possible my three least favorite Bare Naked Ladies songs are on this album.
Oh, I can't wait to get into those. Look, the kind of summation I have about this album is that back in 2008, there was a little independent film that was released that not a lot of people saw, and it was called The Dark Knight. Now, I would imagine if that went over your head, only in a couple of select theaters, but there was a line in the beginning of that, die a hero or live long enough to see yourself become the villain. And let me tell you, ladies and gentlemen, Ed Roberts has very clearly become the villain of Canadian music right now, based on some of the lyrics in this album, some of the gripes in this album, and just the overall laziness of this album.
But just going off the text of the record, I don't disagree with you, Chris. However, I watched a bunch of promotional interviews and stuff that Ed has done for the record, and he seems like exactly the same guy. So I'm just like, what's going on, man? This record has made me question kind of just the concept of parasocial relationships and being a fan and being like, how much can you assume about the shared opinions you might have with artists that, again, I still love and respect. But there's some stuff on this record I am not a fan of.
It's very interesting. You kind of summed that up perfectly. And it's, yeah. You know, in this era where you have more access to people more than ever. You know, they did an entire YouTube series of videos about breaking down each track, you know, Twitter, social media. And I love that the hot take of one of their songs is that, well, I'm sorry if you're offended, but too bad. So you're right. The more that we learn about Ed Robertson, are his opinions not the best? And does he think that we, the listeners, are the problem for that?
Yeah. And there was a promotional interview I watched with him on a morning show where he shared an anecdote that is, I think, possibly related to this, where he was talking to Jim Cuddy, because again, all Canadian musicians are friends, apparently. They live in Toronto. And apparently, recently, Ed has had some writer's block songwriting. And specifically was talking to Jim Cuddy and said, I don't know what to write about anymore. I don't know what my perspective is. I'm used to having something to say with my songwriting, but I don't really know what I'm saying anymore. To which Jim Cuddy responded, right, yeah, that sucks, but it's better than drywalling, right? To which, in the interview, Ed took to mean, who cares, man? We are so lucky to be able to just write songs for a living. You're thinking about this too hard. Just write what you want to write. Which does make sense, but I'm not sure that, even though Ed said that that was his takeaway from it, some of the stuff I don't like on this album does feel like he's trying to say something when he maybe doesn't have much to say.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's really interesting because...
And this is the thing, and I keep on saying stuff on this record. It's mostly that one song. It's mostly that one song.
Well, that's the thing, because the rest of the album, it's so funny. I hadn't heard that that story before, but Jim Cuddy saying it's better than drywalling, because to me, do you think that this is a concept album? Because to me, Okay, interesting.
No. Okay, no, I lied. A little bit, but it feels like the same concept album as De Tour de Force.
Right.
It feels like it's more meditations on middle age and being in that period of your life, and almost even meditations on approaching the end of middle age.
Yeah, I mean, it's like they took It's a Good Life, or Good Life, from De Tour de Force, which was a fun song. And then it's like, oh, you like that one, huh? Well, let's have 16 tracks dedicated to that same feeling. Because for as much as they're saying it's better than drywalling, yeah, The amount of songs in here that are either humble brags about their success, whining about the privilege they have of playing, you know, getting in late to town sometimes and how it's hard to say goodbye. One song, which, you know, I will get into, I'm pretty sure is a veiled threat to his partner that he may or may not cheat and he's going to try to be a good person. Like, it's just, it's so funny that he took that being like, well, better than drywalling. He said, yeah, but only you and I would understand the perils that come with that. And I'm going to make my listeners listen through it. And it's just, oh, I don't like it.
There's also been some songs on previous records that I also did feel like there was maybe veiled references to like other relationships and things like that, which I was careful to not bring up on air because, again, I try to not say anything negative or make assumptions about other people's lives or like, or if you are writing a song like that, does it necessarily have anything to do with your actual life? Are you just telling a story?
Yeah.
But yeah, if it comes up that odd, like, yeah, you start asking questions as if you notice those things as you do lyrical deep dives more and more often.
Oh, I mean, yeah, it is definitely up to the interpreter. And I will tell you that the final song on this album, because I misheard one of the lyrics, I thought the singer was talking about a toy statue that was on top of a DVD player instead of an actual person and the Don Valley Parkway. Because P's sound like D's through my headphones. So I really had to re-listen to that one a few times.
My strategy on this podcast has always been to try to bring positivity, even though it is it's a music history comedy and like, but it is also music criticism. It's our opinions about things. There are a lot of things I do like about this record. So I'm going forward, even on the songs I hate, I'm going to try to see what they were trying to do with it.
You're a better man than me, Ephraim. We're going to assume that it's because maybe it's the morning in Australia. Maybe it's because I'm working right now. Maybe I'm just in a surly mood. But we're gonna take Ephraim's positivity. We're going to take my just general surly negativity, putting people on blast. And we're going to move into the track listing now, if you're ready.
Lay it on me. Let's go on this journey together, Chris.
Track one, Lovin' Life. We're loving life. We love it so much that we want to live it twice. We're loving life, it's even sweeter than a watermelon slice. We take it high. I think the notes I've got for this one is, did you know that they're loving life? These guys are liars based on the rest of the album.
They certainly try to remind us of that many, many times over the course of the song.
For someone who is an accomplished lyricist as Ed Robertson and someone who basically spawned an entire freestyle rap off the top of his head in like, what, 20, 30 seconds in one take, I can see that there's some truth behind that Jim Cuddy story, because if this is him going into the studio being like, writer's block, well, if I just repeat one line a bunch.
You remember that old Simpsons bit about like, so Stephen King, what's your next novel going to be about? And he's like, I don't know, this haunted lamp. Ooh. This song feels like Ed woke up and was like, oh no, I was supposed to write the hit single this week.
I got 20 minutes to get to the studio.
I've got 20 minutes to write a hit single. Like, it feels like it was written. It feels like a first draft that was knocked out in 20 minutes.
Yeah. And for it to kind of open the album, and I guess this is why I, on first listen, I went, oh, this isn't very good. But at the same time, I'm just thinking, this is kind of what cements or just kind of, I guess, began the workings of the idea that this is a concept album in my mind. It's kind of saying, you know, oh, we're loving life. Here it is. This is where we're at in life right now. And then the rest of the songs, I feel, just kind of describe why they're loving life, or the opposite, actually. So it's kind of funny. And I don't know if this is meant to be sardonic, but I feel like there's a lot of complaints in songs that post this. So it's like, hey, we're loving life, but now let me tell you why not.
Right. Well, I like, huh. And that's interesting because we both thought that this song is kind of the opposite of a lot of the rest of the album, but me in a very different way.
Okay.
This song just feels so unrelated to the themes of the rest of the album, which again, I feel does have a lot of like meditations on the end of middle age. This and the next track, spoiler alert, just feel like, oh, we've got to write some stuff that maybe we can try to get on the radio. Like, they feel completely they feel like singles tacked on to a concept album.
On that note of you saying you always try to bring positivity, etc., to this podcast, I feel even worse about some of the notes I wrote. So I'm just going to read this note I put up at this song verbatim to show just what a different mindset I was in. Word for word, this is what I wrote down. Ed Robertson has become a hack. It's like pizza and we want another slice? That's not clever. End sentence.
I mean, I wrote a similar note where I wrote, it's like a pizza and we want another slice. And my note was, Jesus. Like,
that could be open for interpretation.
Like, that line feels like they're... You know, like, when Gordon came out, there was kind of this parody version of the Bare Naked Ladies, like, their image that was like, oh, we're just a bunch of jokey guys. Like, I feel they're like, oh, yeah, we're the guys who love pizza. Jokey. Like, that line feels like the parody version of Bare Naked Ladies.
Yeah, and plus Macaulay Culkin already has the market on pizza-related comedy songs. So what are you doing? Trying to take money off of or food off of Macaulay Culkin's table?
And Jesus Christ, like, we're talking about lazy songwriting. They also rhyme twice with watermelon slice.
Yep.
You can't rhyme slice with twice. You can't rhyme slice with twice twice.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
What about, like, there are other things that rhyme. Price? Lice, even. I mean, it would be a stretch, but
yeah,
at least it's a different word.
It's been a great life, and we'll happily pay the price. Something like that? I don't know. Come on, Ed.
I also said I was going to try to remain positive, but there was a bit of, like, an angry George Costanza kind of tone to my voice in that last rant I just did. So, it's going to be hard to stick to my...
I believe in your editing. This is going to be a 10-minute episode of Clothemen Discuss Bare Naked Ladies after all of the negativity is cut out.
I don't like this song. It's another them just trying to write a single song in the vein of, did I say that out loud or roll out?
Yeah.
Like, it's in that same subgenre. Nope, don't like it. Don't have to listen to it ever again. They got very close to almost having something that was interesting in the song in the very last line to me, because the last line was, you gotta love it if it's gonna love you back.
Mm.
So that was like, oh, is the song about them, like, trying to stay positive? Like, that's the whole thing, is that, oh, is the forced positivity, is it supposed to feel forced?
Yeah.
But it's the one line. It's not enough to get there for me.
And based on the rest of the song, I think that, like, you're giving them too much credit just based on that, right? So, but yeah, that line did stick out to me at the end, but then the song was over and I was very happy for that, which led into track two, because that's how songs go. They're linear. One Night.
We only got one night.
Which is the first single off the album. I've put this, and again, not to put Ed Robertson on blast, but is this another affair song? Is kind of like what I felt about it. Or not maybe an affair. That's actually mean. It could have just been him just with his wife or someone else. I'm not going to assume it, but yes.
I disagree with you on this point.
Okay.
I think this is just, we've got to write a hit. It's a party song.
Mm.
I don't think that the speaker is a character in the song. I think Ed Robertson singing the song is rockstar Ed Robertson when he's saying, we've only got one night, meaning you party people out there in the pit at the concert. Like, in one of those promotional interviews I read with him, specifically he said they wrote this song because they wanted to have another, like, fuck yeah, we're at a concert.
Okay.
Like, one of those kind of songs. But my reaction to that is like, guys, you don't need any more of those. You've got, like, 13 albums. You've got enough stuff in that quiver. Just write what you want to write. Don't feel like you have to... Like, it feels like they feel like they have to write hits.
100%. And... Okay, that
and
makes
not,
that ugh, that makes a lot of sense. But if he is trying to write a party song, then Ed Robertson has not been invited to a party for a very long time, because the tempo of this and just like the actual like the way that it goes through is so slow. But I mean, he is in his 50s, so
real boring song, guys. Just a real drag.
Yeah, I can imagine if in his perfect world, if everyone is forming in the pit, being like, yeah, one night. But in reality, I think this is just where, like, how do you get pumped for a song like this?
Thankfully for me, this is like two-thirds of the negativity I have for this album. We've thankfully got out of the way in the first two songs, but that's not true. The last song that I dislike a lot on this album definitely has over half of my dislike. Like, the dislike is not evenly weighted.
I think I know which one you're talking about.
We've got an amount of it out of the way, though. I have a lot more positive stuff to say about most of the rest of the album.
I was going to ask, why do you think this was, or was it the right idea to make this the single? But you hit the nail on the head right there. If it's just like, okay, cool, it's one night, it's a party song. Yeah.
It's no, and I know why they made it the single, because they were writing it, they were aiming to write a single. I think it's probably a better idea to just write a bunch of songs and one of the good ones make it a single.
Oh my goodness. Any final thoughts before we move on to the next track?
It's boring song. Don't like it. It made me sad because I downloaded it the first day it came out. I'm like, oh, sweet, New Bare Naked Ladies single. And it just bummed me out.
Ah, I remember that, actually. And then they released the second song as a bonus track. And then I remember, I think your words were, yes, this bummed me out. And then the second song got me angry.
Again, stay tuned, folks.
Track 3, Enough Time.
But I haven't got time. Oh, no.
So this is the first Kevin Hearn song, what I wrote here, but you kind of clarified One Night a bit more to me. But I'm like, this is the exact same song as One Night, except it's written from a Poindexter point of view, is what I put.
That's interesting that you found these thematic threads that I did not see, because I didn't tie any of that in this song into like the, oh, we've only got one night, oh, I don't have enough time. Like, I didn't put those two blocks together. I kind of feel like, oh, great, the actual album has started now. We've got the trying to have some hits out of the way. Now we've actually got the real songs.
And for Kevin Hearn being such a nice guy we talk about all the time, I mean, way to neg the audience by denying them a song that will make them feel better and help them heal.
I found it quite cathartic. I really like this song. I found it quite sweet. Like, even as someone who is like, again, I'm not like super duper young, but like I'm 38, like I'm in a different time of my life than the rest, than the band. But like, I don't know, I feel like life is a real rush right now. And I felt like this, like, I often find myself in the afternoon being like, oh, where did the day go? And I feel like this was just like a really sweet song about that feeling, about feeling like there's not enough time in your day, not feeling like there's not enough time in your year, feeling like there's not enough time in the rush of modern life to be able to do the things that matter and stuff. Because I feel like that's a feeling that a lot of people have. Yeah, spoiler alert, I really like this song a lot.
Oh.
Sounds like maybe you don't?
No. I do. I actually do like this song. I guess what I mean is that I completely agree with you about all of that. I'm just talking about quite literally, and maybe I'm taking it too literal, the final kind of words where he says, I could write you a song to make you heal, but I haven't got time. That's what I'm talking about in terms of negging.
Right. He's just right.
that's absolutely fine. It's great. But it's like, oh, well, maybe Kevin Hearn will unlock the secrets to this whole thing. He's like, yeah, I've got it, but I ain't got time to share that song with you. And you just go, oh, Kevin.
Oh.
He had us. He had us on tenderhooks and then just for the knockout punch. Yeah, all of that is very, very true. I completely agree with you. I liked it. I just very much like the very end. It's like, yeah, you want to know? Want to know this song that I've done to make you heal? To make you feel better? Well, I ain't got time for that.
See, again, Chris, we've been talking so seriously about this record so far. I just assumed that was like a serious critique and not like a lead up to like a bit about the final verse. Oh, okay. I'll lighten up.
No, I think if there's anything that we've learned about Kevin's songs, there really isn't any deeper meanings to them. You just have to take them at face value because everything is literally him just describing what he sees.
Just you wait till a couple tracks from now, though.
Which might be my favorite song on the album for very weird reasons.
I'm not sure. I don't know if I have like a favorite or top three, but like this is fighting for my favorite song on the album.
Okay, nice.
I like this song a lot. Yeah. It's really, really folky. I love it. I think it might be my new favorite Kevin Hearn song.
Oh, right on.
Enough Time. I like it a lot. Yeah.
Nice. I think my new favorite Kevin Hearn song is also on this album, but not this one. But it's nice to know that there's a nice refreshing harmony or just a melody to wash out the bitter taste of Love and Life in One Night.
Yeah. I do think it's about 30 seconds too long. I don't think we needed the fade out, but that's my only complaint I have about it.
Track 4, What Do We Need?
What do we need? Not a lot. I'm pretty sure that we could get by with half as much as we've got.
I think this song is just humble brag, the song is what I've put. You know, you can definitely live with half of what you've got, Ed. Come on. It's like, oh, well, we could live with
guys,
half of what
guys,
yeah, of you've course.
Got. You've got all that Big Bang money still, like a tenth.
Yeah, exactly. Half would still make you'd never have to work another day in your life. Your kids probably wouldn't have to work a day in their lives.
Though, dude, again, it is Canada. Like, I can imagine that it's mostly the Big Bang money. But so, as someone who was on a bunch of TV quite a while ago, if you Google again, Ephraim Ellis net worth, the estimates on those AI written pages are much bigger than my actual. So maybe we're overestimating the amount of cheese that Ed is getting. I mean, he has a house on the Danforth. Look at Toronto property prices.
Doja Cat is a gold digger. Only after Ephraim Ellis for his sweet, sweet net worth.
Yes. Oh, God.
What I had a very, I think, mean interpretation of some of these lyrics. But before I get into that, what are your thoughts on this one?
So this feels like a more bittersweet sequel to Good Life, because like this seems like just another, again, in the words of Tyler Stewart, a Documentary Channel banger. It just seems like it's very obviously autobiographical. It does feel like from Enough Time onwards that the whole album is a meditation on kind of like reaching the end of middle age.
Mm.
And it seems like you had a less charitable interpretation of this, but I don't know. I kind of felt for them in the lines about like the how touring kind of tires you out, and kind of the feeling that, oh, what I love to do is play music and live my life and be in a rock band. But also that means I can't be at home with my family, like not being able to do both of those things at the same time. And I get that maybe because, again, like my wife goes on tour with shows, like not rock shows, but like she's away fairly regularly.
Yeah.
I'm away fairly regularly on shows too. I think I empathized with that theme of the song.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. And also, yeah, the exact opposite of the first two tracks, this song felt really honest to me, as opposed to the first few two tracks, which felt really fake. So,
The first time I listened to this, I interpreted it in a very weird way, just not weird way, but it's definitely mishearing something again when he says still making headlines, even though they're not front page. And I thought the first time he said still making headlines, though they're not about page. And I went, whoa. Whoa. And so then I went, okay, whoa, oh, maybe he's still talking about that. It's just unfortunate that Stephen Page, his last name is Page. So I'm like, oh, okay.
So that really would be like a No Vaseline diss track.
Right?
Going right in there. Holy moly.
Yeah, and Stephen Page was just listening at spit take. I thought we were cool.
See, when I heard that line, they had a lot more subtle lyrics about kind of being disappointed that things didn't keep rocketing skyward after 1 week. And I really liked that line because it sounded more like, oh, we have accepted that was not our path.
Yeah, I think it says a lot to me about me if I'm saying, oh, this guy just can't let these things go, because I was like, oh, front page, is he talking about the Coke scandal? Is he talking about this? And I went, no, that's definitely me mishearing it. And I think what you're saying is much sweeter. And that's one of the reasons I love doing this podcast, because clearly I was in a dark place when I wrote these notes. And you're like, you know what? This is a nice, honest song. And I like that.
Again, dude, the first two singles did not make it easy to have charitable interpretations. So it was a battle. I listened to this record a lot more because we're doing this podcast. I listened to this record a lot more than maybe I would have, because those first two singles really turned me off.
Track six, Just Wait.
If I could just wait.
AKA the first appearance on this album of Jim, a voice of an angel, Cregan. What are your thoughts on this one?
My first note I wrote down was, fuck yeah, Jim, so soulful. the first Kevin song and the first Jim song's like, yeah, fucking, yeah, I love it. The harmonies and the organ horn section, so soulful. I really love the kind of like old time, like the kind of like 60s soul feeling of the song. Feels very much in the same genre as Paul Chambers and Here Together, which were two other Jim songs off previous albums. And also, again, having looked at your notes, I feel like you maybe have a different interpretation of some of these lyrics, but I thought this was just another really sweet love song about like that simple life.
Yeah, his two songs, I feel like, are really thematically tied. And I think I put this like in the notes for the final, like his second and final song on the album. It's almost like a micro concept album in a concept album. And maybe I'm reaching there, but I will say that clearly Jim Cregan did not have any writer's block, because he is the new wordplay aficionado, because I really enjoy the lines.
Yeah.
I won't scramble my words, or make you eggs in the morning, won't scramble my words this time. And I went, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
It's better than talking about pizza slices.
God damn it. God damn it. We just love pizza. God, I'm getting angry. Oh, the George is coming back. No, this song is good.
It's pizza, Jerry. Yeah, I mean, like, I think it is really sweet, Melly. It does seem like it's... I mean, I put, yeah, interpretation was, did success ruin his marriage? Which is such a mean take in the sense that...
Where is the ruined marriage part coming out of the lyrics? Because again, this seemed to me, because it's saying like, oh, if I had just, like the whole song is about, oh, if I had just waited 5 minutes and not rushed out the door. Like, it's like, it's saying like, oh, people do, like, similar to Enough Time, like saying, you gotta slow down in life and take the time to appreciate the people in your life and things like that.
That's definitely nicer. I guess me thinking if we had waited just a little more was more, you know, he's on the road all the time and therefore he wasn't able to dedicate as much time to, I don't even know if Jim Cregan is, you know, I did some searching and apparently he married someone in 2003 and some websites say they're still together. Some people, websites say that they're not. So, I mean, I don't know Jim Cregan, personally. I'd love to. If you're listening, please come on. After we've been slandering your album for the last 25 minutes, but, and continue to make up vicious rumors that your brother is dead.
R.I.P.
But I think, you know what? Your interpretation is much sweeter. It's much nicer. And it's true. Cause it also could be, well, if I just waited five more minutes, I might've been able to, you know, say goodbye to my wife before I hit the road. And that's nicer than, well, if I had waited five more minutes, she wouldn't have left me, because that's very final. And again, I'm not getting a lot of sleep these days.
Oh, dude. I did not get the interpretation that the relationship was on the rocks or anything. It was that it is similar to Enough Time, in that is just talking about the necessity of like slowing down and treasuring those moments. And similar theme to, was it On the Lookout? Because I think, Jim had another song that he writes about, you know, we got to enjoy this moment, this, because it might be the last. I feel like that's a recurring theme in a lot of his lyrics on these albums.
I think maybe just because I am really trying to fit square pegs into round holes, because when I said concept album, you know, beginning is we're loving life, we're talking about the success of the band, and then maybe I'm just putting some overarching theme into each song, thinking, okay, well, this is Jim Cregan and his experience with success in the band, etc. Because also, this is really dumb, but In Flight is what the album's called, and a lot of these songs are about the travel schedule, about like just rushing around, about, we're away from our families, things like that. So to me, something about the title is also kind of waxing about them kind of like reflecting on that touring schedule and, you know, being 35 years as professional musicians. So saying that, I guess maybe that's it. Whereas I think it's a nicer interpretation of it that you've done, because it could very well still fit into that, you know, while he's out the door, get to the airport, go to the next town, but it could apply to any situation where someone's running up the door, or, you know, everyone has a busy schedule. Everyone's got a routine with their partner in the mornings, in the afternoons, things like that. And sometimes you take for granted that without just being present, I guess.
I think that's a good way to put it. I feel like this is an ode to being present.
Yeah.
Or trying to be present. Yeah.
That ties it up nicely. We're going to keep that positivity train rolling, because it's going to be derailed very soon.
Very soon. Right at the end of the song, I wish I have the digital version of the song, so I do not have any liner notes. I really want to know if it's the Persuasions again doing the backing vocals at the end of the song. No. I'm serious, because it does not sound like the band. It sounds like they have more people doing backing vocals, and it kind of sounds like them from that duet album. And because like the song has that more old school 60s, 70s soul kind of vibe, like I wonder if actually they do play on the track. And I'm a bit disappointed that in this modern age there's no easy way for me to look that up, because this is an independent record.
I am not laughing at that. Oh, how outlandish it is. I love that. Like, I was laughing in delight at the connection of that. And yes, they definitely could do that, because they could use their sweet credibility to get that going. Speaking of getting going, let's move on to the next track, which is Waning Moon.
The moon is up and it's waning, I guess about a half remaining. The stars are out and they're shining.
This motherfucker is literally just describing what he sees in the sky. And I feel like he's just stealing Kevin's shtick about writing about things that he sees.
I don't hate that Ed's voice is back in that kind of Kermit the Frog vocal range. Because it's quite sweet. It sounds silly, but I don't hate it. And I like the accordion on this song.
Yeah. I get that he moves on to it, but the first time that I listened to this song, I was just so, like, it's 30 seconds, and it very much was a when are they going to get to the fireworks factory scenario, because he's just talking about the moon, talking about the stars, talking about the clouds, and I'm like, is he going somewhere with this? And then eventually he did, but still.
Yeah, and unlike the first five songs on this album, I don't know what this song is about. Maybe it is just about the moon. All I get is like, yeah, it just feels a bit sad. I got no interpretations.
Well, to me, like, this interpretation, and this might be one of the meanest ones, and I am sorry about that, is that just, he says how much you'll miss me, not how much I'll miss you, or it's not how much we'll miss each other. So for him to say, as we're looking at the wispy clouds, I see how much you'll miss me, and then he says, I'll try to be the nice guy. So to me, I'm just thinking, is this long distance when they're on tour? They're looking up, him and someone are looking up at the sky in different parts of the world or different parts of the country. And for him to say, well, I'll try to be a nice guy, normally I'd have way much more goodwill associated with them. But then after hearing another song that's coming up and the basically interpretation of, well, I'm sorry if you were offended, I'm like, you know what? I feel like this guy doesn't really take accountability for his actions. So that was my interpretation. It feels kind of like an implied cheating song.
Which again makes me think, like, Steve's song again?
Oh yeah. How much you'll miss me. If that's the case, then man, he thinks pretty highly of himself.
That's what I mean. Yeah, but again, this is again pure conjecture. My main thing about this song is that right now, even though I listened to this album a bunch to prep for our podcast, I honestly am having difficulty remembering what it sounds like.
Except Kermit the Frog vibes, which is very accurate, by the way.
Yeah. So it feels forgettable.
The next song is not forgettable, at least in my mind, which is 50 for a while.
I can't expect you to know I'll protect you no matter where you trek to.
I like this track a lot. I put here, it hits different now that I'm a parent, but I've been a parent since this song was released, so it's not like I knew a life outside of this before it was afterwards. But I mean, my interpretation of this, and again, you know, in that concept album that I've just conjured up in my head and I'm really forcing, is that, you know, just kind of talking about his kids. Like, clearly this is a song about parenthood, and that's how I feel about it. And that might just be my interpretation, but I love it a lot, and it's very sweet. It's got some of that old Ed Robertson mojo. This is probably tied up there with my favorite song on the album.
I agree completely. I love the fiddle on it. I am here for that sound. This song sounds interesting, and it's just such a stark contrast to the first two tracks, which were so boring. I want more. I just want more of this stuff. I love, like, I just, the country bangerness. I love it. I was going to ask you, as a new parent, how does this song make you feel? But you beat me to it. So,
yeah, it's just, I love the, you know, this comes with a lifetime guarantee. Oh, man, just some of the, I can't expect you to know that I'll protect you. Lifetime guarantee. I love the whole chorus of it. And that's such a beautiful line, because obviously, you know, my kid's 10 months old now, and, you know, she's my whole life. Blah, blah, blah. I could do an entire podcast based on how much I love her and how much she's changed my life.
Look at you. You love your child. What a loser.
We've lost countless subscribers. It's like, oh, this is when I unsubscribe. Look at this loser. But I really do, like, I look at her and I don't think that she ever will comprehend how much, like, what I would do to protect her. You know what I mean? So it hits a lot. And, you know, that comes with a lifetime guarantee, because it is unconditional love. And it's just, it's really good. And it's happy and it's sweet. And you're right about those first two tracks. You know, the laziness and just it being boring. This song has a lot going on. And I like that you really summed it up. I like that word, interesting.
I've just come up with a really crank quack theory about the next song that ties into this song.
Ooh,
that
lay it
on me. Pure conjecture. So I also noticed that obviously this song is about being a parent, but there's a couple verses towards the end that do seem to be about the internet. Because there's a verse that says, we're more connected than we've ever been, but more selective of the things we're seeing. we're never going to change the way we think if every argument's a slam dink. And then it goes back into the stuff about, I'll protect you, I'll do this. My quack theory is, did one of Ed's kids get cyberbullied or get into like an argument on the internet and then just totally turned Ed against the entire concept of social media and the modern discourse, and therefore then he felt like he had to write the next song about that? Could that possibly be a way to pull our feelings about our relationship with Ed Robertson out of the fire? Is the next song a response to his kid being cyberbullied or something? I don't know.
That is a really interesting and also believable like backstory or just like actual motivation. And I want to believe it. I will believe it now going forward. I need to believe it because
me too.
If not, I feel like anyone who has listened to this album, anyone who has listened to our podcast, anyone who's just like listened to the last 25 minutes know that everything that we are talking about, and if you're a Bare Naked Ladies fan, you were probably as perplexed as we were for the next track, which we're going to get into, which is, of course, Too Old.
Keep your head on a swivel, watch what you say. The devil you don't know wants to see you pay. What was funny one time is a crime today.
Ephraim, your thoughts.
So, keeping in my strategy of being positive.
You can't see this, listeners, but Ephraim is gritting his teeth so hard, I think they're about to break.
And also, I try to edit all of the pauses out of this podcast, so there was a lot of dead silence that you're not hearing as I was gathering my thoughts. I think Too Old by the Bare Naked Ladies is the best song musically on the album In Flight, which sucks because the lyrics are in such poor taste that it does not just leave a stink all over this song, it leaves a stink over the entire record.
Yeah, I think you, and it's not my story to tell, but if I could refresh your memory, I think you said something about how, like, the first time you listened to it, oh, great, and then Megan, your wife, I think, said, yeah, but have you listened to the lyrics? And then that really just, exactly like you said, you just went, oh, now it's poison.
And Megan did also say, like, so are you and Chris stopping the podcast now after listening to this song?
Stay tuned until the end, listeners.
Say it ain't so, Ed. Say it ain't so.
So why, I mean, it's probably a rhetorical question, but just curious. So why are the lyrics poison to you? Probably the same with me, but I'd love to hear your thoughts about this and just kind of how offensive to you or just like how upsetting they are.
It's, oh my
God. Not offensive or upsetting, but just disappointed. Yeah.
I can feel my id rising. I can feel it like as it just makes me say the song is just the entire song is just a really boring railing against quote-unquote cancel culture. The line, what was funny one time is a crime today. Fuck off, man. Come on.
Yes. Like that lyric definitely stood out to me. I'm like, holy crap, yeah, but...
I'm really sad that this song exists because I don't, like, this is not what I want to be podcasting about.
And that's not the takeaway that you should be taking from things that, like, you know, just being politically correct or some things that were funny before are crime. Yeah, a lot of things are crimes now that people got away with and people thought were funny back in the day. Like,
times have changed. The Overton window moves over time and get with it.
So this is not that I am, we are not nearly on the scale of the Bare Naked Ladies, like when we were doing this, but I think back to like, when we were doing the Rocket Scientist, our sketch comedy troupe. And I remember specifically there was a sketch I wrote called Ghost Mice and it was good, but there was actually a line in that I wrote where I actually used like the word retard in a comical way. And I remember, and it was 2011 or something like that. And it got a laugh, but like even some people were like, oh, I look back at it and I'm like, that's actually really horrible and really kind of like mean-spirited that I put that. Because there are so many other words you could have put and it's just, it's not cool. And I remember looking at the text going, I'm not really proud of myself for that one. And it's on YouTube and I remember kind of like rewatching it because I'm very vain. And I guess just seeing that and going, hey.
Yeah, and like the only part of the lyrics of this song that I can maybe even remotely empathize with is the... the line at the end of one verse. It was like, and it never goes away. Because, like, I can kind of empathize with being kind of weirded out that because of the internet, moments like the one that you're just describing are, like, up there forever.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I can empathize with being like, oh, that was, like, an embarrassing moment. So I can empathize with the internet not allowing people to forget moments like that. But the rest of the song makes it feel like, but you shouldn't be sorry for it.
Yes.
Like,
yeah, exactly. And so do you know any, because the cyberbullying thing is really interesting, but also do you know if there were just
pure conjecture.
No, we're going with it.
Headcanon. It's fine.
Ed Cannon. So that was dumb. So do you know, would there be any type of reference? Because maybe I'm just, you know, I've been away from Canada for like 7 or 8 years. Was he in the headlines recently or something like that? Like, there wasn't any like hot take where it was like Ed Robertson canceled over something, eh? Yeah.
No, I specifically don't think that he was. Yeah, so no, I'm not aware of anything.
Yes, sympathy for things being put on the internet, but if it's a learning lesson, or if it's just with the times and you're like, oh yeah, that was bad of me, or, you know, maybe I look at that moment and go, okay, well, I wouldn't do that again. But for him to be like, sorry, you're offended, the song, that's pretty garbage.
I, again, hopefully my editing has made me sound more eloquent than I've been for the past couple minutes that we've been discussing this song, but yeah, that's exactly what I hate about this song that you've summed up perfectly. It's the thesis of the song is, oh, I'm sorry you were offended. And that's just not a good look in the year 2023.
And guys, everyone rest assured, Ephraim has been very eloquent while live as well. So no, I think we've summed it up very, very well.
Yeah, I think, okay, I'm trying real hard. One last thing. Again, I did like this song musically. And the only other bit of lyrics that I was like, maybe I can get behind it was the, like, there was one verse that was the, when you're swinging your hammer, slinging your grammar, everybody looks like nails. That bit, I'm like, if what he's talking about with that lyric is the idea that there's that kind of discourse about, like, you know, the quote unquote, the left eating itself, like people not being able to work together and form a political coalition because people are too worried about ideological purity, like being able to get past that so that we can fight the real battles.
Yeah.
If that's what he's singing about, then sure, I can get behind it. But listening to the rest of the song, I don't think that's what he's singing about. I think he's saying, oh, I'm sorry you were offended.
Is it just publicity stunt to release this as the second song? Because that baffles me. And I mean, it got people talking, but
I don't think so, because again, I do think musically it's one of the better songs on the album. If you take the lyrics out of it, I think if you just had gibberish singing over it, I think it's the best single on the album. But too bad it's not, because
it is not. But we do go into the next track, which, prove me otherwise, is Kevin Hearn doing damage control for the previous song, and that is See the Tower.
See the tower, tall and beautiful, like a thimble on a sharp pencil. People know of you no matter where I go. Your reputation is international. See the tower.
He sure did see a tower.
Christopher, does Kevin Hearn listen to this podcast, and is he fucking with us?
I had the exact same thought when I first heard this song.
Because this song feels like he's written a song in exactly the style, a parody song of himself, but in the way that we have parodically described his songwriting.
It is definitely my favorite song dedicated to someone seeing the CN Tower. It's probably the only one, but let me tell you, I did think that.
What a goof.
Like, this
what
just,
a goof.
This is just Kevin Hearn's just songwriting in a nutshell, and I love it so much. It's not my favorite track on the album, but it really is you just kind of are so angry about too old, and then you're just perplexed, and it takes away some of the damage, because you go, wait, what?
This song really starts off feeling like a reject from the kids' album to me, but if you keep listening to the lyrics, it still sounds like a kid's song, but the lyrics just keep getting weirder and darker as the song goes. Like, what's with that verse where he's just griping about several Toronto mayors?
Yeah, right?
Like, there's a weird line about Rob Ford doing coke, a weird line about Mel Lastman's furniture store, and, like, the corruption revolving. Like, it's a weird song. but it masks it by sounding like a kid's song.
Right? I guess if like I was really trying to look for interpretation in the lyrics, which is funny because it's something I don't really do for Kevin Hearn's songs, it's like maybe the CN Tower is the constant in Toronto. It's always going to be there. And he's talking about sometimes just the, not the scandals, but things that are almost embarrassment to Toronto's reputation. But we've got this beautiful architectural wonder that for a very long time was like the world's largest freestanding building. But yeah, I don't know. I think he's just a real fan of the CN Tower and all that it encompasses.
And there's also that line about, it sounds like the CN Tower was where he went on his first date with his wife.
Yeah.
That line. And I can get behind, like, I can understand the CN Tower being important to you because of that. Because like the first movie my parents went to go see on a date was The Towering Inferno with Steve McQueen. And like my dad has a poster from that movie. Like there's a lot of sentimentality just for that movie, no matter how good the movie is, just because it was the first movie they saw together. So if that was where like your first date was, going to the CN Tower, yeah, I'd wax romantic about the CN Tower.
I think you've also talked about your parents' first date being The Towering Inferno in a previous episode. If we can get at least one or two people watching that movie, hey, there we go. Mission accomplished.
It's actually not that bad. Again, like some like 70s trash, but you know.
Yeah. I think that's it. There's not a lot more to say about this album that Kevin Hearn, this song that Kevin Hearn hasn't said.
Yep.
Yeah. Have you ever been up to the CN Tower?
Not since I was like 11. I remember I had a birthday party at the CN Tower where I played laser tag and it was great.
I went to the revolving restaurants on a date once in my 20s. It was very overpriced.
Story checks out.
Next track is Wake Up.
You hold it down when I'm not around. I never asked you how you're holding on.
The second and final song by Jim Cregan. I really like this song.
Me too.
I did put in my notes, so is Jim Cregan still married? Not sure. Mini concept. Anyways, this song is boring. I do like it, but I do think it's not. Anyways, this song is boring. Look, it's not his best, but I do like his voice, things like that. I expected more. It's kind of sad. It's like usually I have a high bar with Jim Cregan songs, and they're like musically complex and interesting and lyrically as well. But this one, it was pleasant in a way that a Jim Cregan song is pleasant. But yeah, just kind of fell flat. How about you?
Yeah, it yet again, it also feels like another letter to his wife or partner. I really like the dreamy feel of the song, like the previous song. I don't like it. You know, Ed was talking about like not knowing what to write about anymore. I feel like Jim is very confidently writing about being a happily married domestic life type of figure. Because again, like previous song, there's reference to making breakfast. This song has references to like just making tea and going to the cottage. And I find it interesting. And I feel like, yeah, I'm worried that Ed feels that that's not interesting enough to write a song about, and I think Jim has clearly proven that it is. I also really like the weird rhyme scheme in one of the verses of the wake up, I'm coming up, bringing my pick up truck. There's a lot of internal rhymes with the up syllable in that, and it's gonna da 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 da. Like it's got a really cool like kind of bouncy rhyme and meter and internal rhyme scheme that I dig.
Yeah, I also look at it. It's nice because you know he's kind of talking about in my weird way. Well, I said micro concept. You know he's leaving in the morning for that first song, and then it's like he's coming home. He's waking up his partner to be like, hey, I like the cottage idea too. You know, making tea, but it's also like, hey, I just got in, let's have some tea. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Boring, but at the same time, there are much more offensive songs on this album.
Quite literally.
Yeah. Next track is Clearly Lost.
Don't follow me, I'm clearly lost. Fell far from the tree, paid the cost. A tiny seed, trying to live through the frost. Why's it take so long? Am I doing this wrong?
Not that I think it's a great song, but country banger. This is definitely a country banger.
Absolutely.
Of all country bangers. This is the most country song on the album, if not in like recent memory for them, to be completely honest. Like this is like not even like pop country. This is like a full-on country song.
I think that Ed's voice these days sounds the best when he's doing this weird low register channeling Johnny Cash kind of tone that he has in this song. Ed sounds better than he has in a lot of like in quite a while vocally on this song, and it honestly does feel like I want to hear like an early 2000s late period Johnny Cash cover of this song. It's great. Yeah, it's fantastic.
It's a song that I kind of think back to previous albums, because you know where he's talking about fell far from the tree, paid the cost. I just immediately, I'm thinking, you know, relationship with his father, eyes off the road. Is that a reference to the car wreck that he spoke about when he was younger? Like, I feel like there's some pain in the lyrics of this song, and I'm just wondering what he's what he's kind of talking about, because there's so much speculation we've kind of given about his past and things like that.
And yet again, there's even another line that I'm like, Steve again? Because there's a line that's I should have known better wasn't worth it for another song. So I'm like, is that a reference to like feeling bad for writing Runaway or something?
Yeah. Oh, you'd hope so.
Like, it seems like there's some darkness and apologies. I don't know. It's weird. Yeah.
Well, maybe in 10 or 15 years, then we'll get the apology song for Too Old.
Christ, I can only hope. My God. I also, even though I don't usually go in for the Jokey Boys lyrics, the line, I had it all worked out, I was in the clear, then the devil on my shoulder started grinning, saying, hold my beer. That's pretty good. That's pretty good. I like that. That line made me chuckle.
Yeah, I did like that one as well. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
And again, like, lamenting himself, well, not being the villain, but like a lot of talks about, you know, like just kind of clear cut. So your interpretation of, you know, is there another line about Steven, et cetera, it's interesting because like maybe he is just wrestling with some of the things. I was going to say wrestling with some of the things he said, but then why would you write Too Old? Because two tracks before it would be like, nah, fuck you, I meant all of it.
Yeah, like...
Oh, just very, very confusing. Very confusing album. Any final thoughts on this one before we move on?
Yet again, I don't have a real handle on what it's about lyrically. I love it musically. Really great country song. And yeah, Ed's voice sounds fantastic.
Next track is Dream Hotel. Sure, mademoiselle. Welcome to the Dream Hotel. Welcome to the Dream Hotel. Again, just good old Kevin writing about checking into a hotel in New York.
Or having a dream about checking into a hotel in New York.
He always does something really musically interesting. Like, there's a lot going on here in terms of the layers, etc. And it does have that kind of like ethereal feel to it that is almost dreamlike. So, you know, it's not as in your face with some of the lyrics. I mean, it's still about literally going up to the desk, checking into a hotel, but I don't mind it.
Yeah, but I feel like, correct me if I'm wrong, I feel like he is literally describing a dream. In this song.
Yeah, just
because he's
York,
talking
just
about
checking.
Leonardo's. Like, I assume that Leonardo is DiCaprio, though I wish it was the Ninja Turtle.
If he's describing a dream, it could be.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, but it's like that reference to like, oh, this famous person's here. Oh, this, and then there's the line about a giant wall of pancakes in the park. Like, I think he is literally just describing a weird dream he had, or trying to evoke the feeling of having a weird dream. Like in that same kind of like, it reminded me, the lyrics kind of reminded me of like Strawberry Fields Forever, like that kind of thing. Like, again, just describe it like just weird dreamlike imagery.
Now I'm just imagining him like getting to the studio and he's like, oh, it looks like I brought my dream journal instead of my music books. But then that means, and he's got a dream journal on his bedstand and he's got books for lyrics and it just says sweet lyrics on it. And he just picked the wrong one to go to the studio that day. And he's like, well, I can make this work.
This is like obvious. I think this is my fourth least favorite song on the album because the three singles are my least favorite songs on the album. The first two tracks and Too Old are my least favorite songs on the album. Nay, they are my three least favorite Bare Naked Ladies songs. But if we separate those out, I think this is my next least favorite song, and it's just because, like, I love describing weird dreams to my friends, but my friends are always like, you know, it's not actually interesting hearing about other people's dreams.
Oh.
It's never as interesting to other people as it was to you having dreamt that dream, and I feel like this song is similar, and it also, like, similar to Enough Time, I think it's about 20 to 30 seconds too long.
Describing someone's your dreams to someone else, they don't usually get interested unless they're involved in them. And then that just shows that everyone's got a bit of, self-centered streak. It's like, oh, was I in this dream?
Mm-hmm.
Pass. No, but there was a giant wall of pancakes. All right, fine, Kevin. Well, you can sing this solo.
And Leonardo DiCaprio or the Ninja Turtle was there.
All right, moving on to our next track, the penultimate song, I Am Asking You To. I'm asking you to. I don't mind this one. I actually think it's quite a lovely song. I think he's just talking about his busy schedule, but at the same time, it's probably in my top three, which is kind of saying the least painful punches I've taken in a fight. But, you know, it's still, you know, like it's all still not the best. But yeah, I don't mind this one.
This week, pay-per-view, Chris Small goes 14 rounds with the Bare Naked Ladies album In Flight. I guess you've also answered this question. I was going to say, so what's this song about, Chris? Because apparently you think it's about maybe a busy schedule, but like it sounds really specific to me, but there's not a lot of kind of narrative context clues in there. There was the lyric, no one should have to sleep alone so much. No one should have to work this hard just to keep in touch. No one as loved as you are should not feel loved enough.
Yeah.
So like that feels, oh wait, maybe I'm figuring it out. Yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe he is speaking to like his family or something like that because he's got a busy schedule as a touring musician.
Yeah. And I guess that just like, again, fits into this concept album that I've just like interpreted in my head. But like, yeah, he's still talking about that, you know, we're loving life. It's good, but it very much, it's quite sweet where exactly like you said, it's like someone half as loved as you are doesn't deserve. He's all about things half. He's like, yeah, I could give away half my wealth. I could give, you know, if you're half as loved. I'm just like, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, never mind. I just reread those lyrics. Yeah, that's what the song is about. That's obviously what the song is about. I don't know why I didn't see it before, but I think that's sweet.
Yeah.
I think it's, yeah. Yeah. And again, that's it. And that's also, you know, that's honest and open and, you know, that's kind of cool that he can share those thoughts with his audience. If indeed that's what this song is about, because that's,
yeah,
I feel like that's some, you know, talking about your, you know, private life and your, you know, the issues that you face as a human being and, you know, troubled times possibly in your relationships and things like that. I don't know.
Yeah. It's better than being open and honest about staring at the moon and thinking about cheating on your partner. So I much like this song more.
Again, pure. These are just theories. We're just spitballing here. We have no objective proof. Allegedly.
Jim Cregan.
Allegedly.
I'm sorry if you're listening. Please come on. And because we do think that Kevin Hurt is listening, can't wait to hear your song about the sky dome, buddy.
Yeah. Am I crazy again? Because I hate all three singles on this thing. Here's your single, guys. Like, I know it's not the most fast-paced or upbeat, but it's got a real nice build to it. It's got a dramatic, it's got drama. It feels like a big song by the end of it. Here's your single, guys.
Yeah, it's not the most fast-paced of things, but it was one of the songs that when I say I don't mind it, it immediately hooked me. And so much of this album is quite boring in its production, quite repetitive. So to have something, I mean, that's what you want in a single. Your interpretation, I hated all three singles with an absolute passion. I'm like, that's not what you want in a single. What you want in a single is something that draws you in.
No, this is approaching my final thoughts, but yeah, I would really like this album if it was an 11 track record without the three singles on it.
Yeah.
I think this would be a great record if it weren't for that. But again, skipping ahead. Chris, do you think the chorus and its phrase, once again, I am asking you, is this also a weird reference to that Bernie Sanders meme with the once again, I am asking you for your support? Because the phrasing is so almost exactly the same, but the song sounds too serious for it to be that. I don't know.
You just blew my mind with I Am Asking You, because now I've got a different interpretation in my head to throw it out. It's a sequel to Leave, where he was said, I've informed you to leave. I am asking you once again. And he's talking about someone who's half as loved. Still about his family, but if you look at that, it could very much be him talking about his brother.
No, I think that your first interpretation is correct, and this is talking to his current living family. Once again, I am asking you to put up with me leaving to go on tour or whatever. That's the unspoken end of the sentence. I think it would have been cool if the unspoken word was leave and it was a sequel to that song. That would have been really, really cool. But again, you should write how you're feeling, and hopefully he's worked through those demons enough that he doesn't need to write another song about that, even though it would be cool for us listeners. It's probably better for his mental health.
Yeah, absolutely it is.
So that's good on the positive side.
And speaking of positivity, that kind of ties nicely into the final track of this album, which is Peace Lady.
Of the Peace Lady.
I am a sucker for a Toronto song. As I alluded to in the back, this song is actually about a real person, Pauline Davis, who lived in the ravine near the DVP, which is the Don Valley Parkway to non-Toronto listeners, which is a very famous freeway/road in Toronto, which is also referred to as the Don Valley parking lot, because doesn't matter what time of day it is, you are going to hit traffic. There's a series of bridges that are over the DVP that you drive through. And there was a woman named Pauline Davis who was living in those ravines for 25 years. And she would come out of the ravine every day and would hold up like positive signs and just like flash the peace sign to motorists And she, this was pretty much like her 9-to-5, essentially. Like this was just like her life's calling kind of thing, in the sense that like she made a point. Like I heard about this on one of the behind the scenes YouTube things, and he was very clearly, he said, oh, she lived in the ravine by choice. And I went, okay, like interesting take in that sense. But it sounded like just she was very much like it. Well, she wasn't a panhandler, or she wasn't anyone who was like, I don't have an ulterior motive. It was just literally to kind of forward on this message of peace. And that's very sweet. I was unaware that this person existed until this song. So I think it's kind of cool that her message is getting out there.
I was just about to say that, unlike a lot of other kind of like local culture fixture Toronto eccentrics, I had never heard of this person before.
Yeah.
Absolutely fascinating. And I also, when I was reading her obituary, I was like, lived in the woods. I'm like, oh no. Like,
yeah.
Like it's so sad, but she sounded like she was living the way she wished to.
Yeah.
Almost. Like, yeah. Yeah. Which is, again, it's fascinating. It's bizarre. Yeah. My note was, she lived in the woods. Jeez.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Like same when he kind of went by choice. I went, I guess that's good, but like, it's just, Yeah, apparently this is Tyler's favorite song by Kevin for this album.
I disagree, but I don't think that, I think that's a totally valid opinion. I think it's a pretty great song.
I also really like Ed Robertson kind of summed it up, and I went, oh, that's like hauntingly beautiful, where he said, it's a loving tribute to someone you never knew. And it's true. He wouldn't have known this person by, it was just, you know, I guess the concept or, you know, the legend around them. And Kevin, it's funny because you said, we don't know this person hadn't heard about this. And I think that's because a lot of the locals or those kind of famed, like just institutions in Toronto, we almost grew up with around that time. But Kevin talked about seeing her on the bridge when he was a little boy. So like, this is quite before our time. Yeah, that was just a really beautiful take from Ed. I went, oh, that's great. And, you know, getting the message out there too, which is great. So she's immortalized now in song.
I really like that a lot.
I wish that it was on a better album that she was immortalized on, but you know what? It's a nice...
Yeah. In your research, because there's also a reference in the lyrics to, it's like he says, this is for you, Pauline, and Johnny Barbs too. Do you have any idea who Johnny Barbs is? I tried to look this up and I found zero clues.
Yeah, neither did I. And they don't refer to him in like this video that I spoke about. It's really just about Lynn Davis. So maybe an inside joke, or maybe someone that he drove with. But yeah, one cool thing that Tyler talked about as well in this is that they filled a rain drum full of metal barbs to
going
back and forth through it. And that evoked the sound of traffic. And it, you know, I'm probably not as musically, that had to be pointed out to me, but as soon as it was, I'm like, oh, that's actually really cool, because it does, and maybe it's just because it was an Inception thing where it's in my head, but I went, wow, that really, I can see that, where, you know, speaking of Leonardo DiCaprio, but just traffic going by. Yeah, I this is probably one of my favorite Kevin songs now. It's probably in my top three, and it's my favorite one on the album by him.
Yeah, one of my, I originally thought, like, maybe I would cut this and end the album with Dream Hotel instead, but I've come around. I was gonna say I'd cut Dream Hotel, but I wouldn't, because the songs I would cut instead are the three singles, and the album would be too short. You can't cut a fourth song.
Yeah, I didn't like it on first listen, or it was just kind of non, like a nothing song, but the more I listen to it, I really do like this song. And it's almost like at the very end, that like wailing like peace, it's very, again, it's very ethereal, or like dreamlike. It's like someone's ascending to heaven. It's very cool.
Totally.
That's In Flight.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we haven't really been shy about what we think, but sometimes when we go through these songs, and sometimes I've got too much of a negative mindset. I'm going to work on that. But sometimes I'll go, I don't like this album. And then as we're talking about it, either, you know, you with your positivity and just your, you know, just getting to talk to my friend in general, which always puts me in a good mood, but also the notes that you have, sometimes I will go back and I'll be like, okay, maybe I was too harsh, or maybe I do like this one more than I thought. But now, upon revisiting this and listening to it a few times, it definitely is my least favorite album by them. It's just, it's them resting on their laurels a lot. You can very much tell that Ed did have writer's block, so that makes a lot of sense now that you've told me about that. And just the horrible, tone-deaf, just baffling addition of Too Old in their repertoire. Like, do they... Is this going to be something that's in their concerts? Like, how is this interpreted by fans? Like, if it's a single, it must be on the set list of their tours.
It's gotta be. It was the second single.
Yeah.
And that's a really good point, because it has been embraced by some fans, from what I can tell from the comments on their social media. Because again, I was curious. I wanted to know what the hot goss was in the release of this, but there was just as many comments being like, what the heck, guys? This is really, really, again, tone deaf and in poor taste.
So looking at setlist.fm, September 22nd, 2003, Bare Naked Ladies setlist from the Bank, Cincinnati, Ohio. I'm scrolling through. Oh, this is fantastic. This all looks good. Not a single mention of Too Old. They did it for their encore. They played one song for an encore, and they did that song.
Weird.
Your thoughts?
My thoughts are, I'm glad that we do this podcast because it made me listen to this record more. Because of me having to do that research, I gave this record a second chance. And I do actually think this is a great 11-song record. The problem is, it is 14 songs, and the three singles are, no joke, my three least favorite Bare Naked Ladies songs.
You beat me to the punch. I was going to say, what three songs would you cut out, Ephraim?
Take a wild guess. I've repeated it several times to the point where I might have to remove some of those references in editing because I feel like I'm boring the audience.
Nope.
All three of those songs, Too Old because it's offensive, and One Night and Love and Life are so just hacky and boring and lazy and trying to write a Black Eyed Peas Tonight is the Night single. Those three songs just leave such a stink over the whole enterprise that it makes it very difficult to like the other 11 pretty darn great songs that are in the regular vein. Even if I did cut those three songs out, it's still Fighting With Fake Nudes to be my least favorite. And because of those songs, it is definitely my least favorite.
Yeah. So maybe next time you approach Jim Cuddy for advice, Jim Cuddy, if you're listening, just keep your mouth shut. Just let him struggle with writer's block until he comes up with something better.
They just put out, it feels like, maybe I'm too old that time is passing quickly. It feels like they put out Detour de Force yesterday. I know it was 2 years, but I feel like they could have afforded to wait and maybe get some other people's reactions to tell them maybe don't release Too Old and alienate a significant portion of your fan base.
Yeah, it's no wonder Donovan Woods isn't returning your calls anymore.
Oh god. Yeah, those are my final thoughts on that album. I did have some thoughts on, I haven't listened to a lot of Stephen Page's solo material, but he just put out a really great record that I'm listening to a lot to. So I was gonna say my final thoughts on In Flight are, I'm probably gonna listen to the new Trans-Canada Highwayman record a lot more than In Flight, Stephen Page's weird supergroup album he put out with a bunch of other mid-90s Canadian alt rockers that are all covers of 60s and 70s Canadian songs. Yeah, that record's great. Everybody should go check that album out.
That's amazing. I love at this stage in like people's careers, someone like Stephen Page, who's as established as he is like, you just get to have fun and you just get to do passion projects.
Yeah.
And that is like, that's just, he's clearly making that for himself and like for his friends. And it's like, if people buy it, if people vibe it, that's great. And clearly you are. Everyone else should too.
And I wouldn't have guessed it, but he does a great cover of Undone by the Guess Who on that record. She's come undone. She didn't know what she was headed for. It's fantastic.
I remember you singled that out when we were going back and forth leading up to this, and I listened to it, and yeah, banger. I think just based on not a lot more content to shoot, and just based on, you know, the bad taste of this left in her mouth, it might be time to not talk about the Bare Naked Ladies for a while. But I definitely still want to talk to you, Ephraim, so our listeners might have to take with that as they will. We got a couple of ideas of what we would like to do, you know, going forward.
There will be more episodes of this podcast. The subject matter might be slightly different. We're going to have an off-screen meeting about what we want to do next, but don't you worry, our dear audience. The boys will be back in town. Thin Lizzy, 1970.
So until the next episode where you are listening to ? Ephraim, where can people find you?
Folks, you can find me on the internet. You can still find me on Threads at Ephraim Ellis. I am also on Instagram at Ephraim Ellis, and that's where I do the most of my posting. You can also find me on the Cameo. As we discussed earlier in the episode, hit me up for a shout out. I think it's pretty fun. I'm having a great time on that app. You can also buy the script for my first play on the air through the Canadian Play Outlet, which is at CanadianPlayOutlet.com. It's supposed to be on stage, but reading is fun, guys.
I read the first draft, and I really enjoyed it, so you guys should too, now that it's like complete. Support Canadian artists, guys. Support artists in general.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it has a sweet cover art by the same artist who does our podcast cover art, my sister Jerusha Ellis.
Oh, amazing. Shout out to Jerusha. Mm-hmm. Yes, I should have clued that in, or I should have put two and two together when I saw the cover of that of the play.
There's only so many illustrators that will do work for me without an invoice, even though I insist on trying to give them an invoice because they're too kind to me.
And you can find me on all of the socials. On X, I am csmall201. On TikTok, I am smallz201, although I've only released about 4 videos there, but, you know, there's something. And on Instagram, csmalltraveler, the official X, still sounds weird to say, the handle of this podcast is CMDBNL. So give us a follow over there. We mostly retweet stuff from the Bare Naked Ladies and talk about when the next album's coming out. And by album, I mean episode. But hey, if a new album comes out, we'll also talk about that too. But until then, my name is Chris Small.
And I'm Ephraim Ellis.
And we have been clothed the whole time. Take it easy, everyone.
See you later, folks. We did it!